Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report limitations apply. Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report limitations apply.
I'm Brian Goldfinger of Goldfinger Injury Lawyers. Is your insurance company forcing you to go back to work when your doctors say you can't? If this sounds familiar, look no further than my law firm. Visit goldfingerlaw.com and get us working for you.
Hello and welcome to a slightly late reaction podcast. After Game 6, the Raptors eliminated the Washington Wizards by a score of 102-92. It was a delicious win, a very satisfying win, really changed the tone of the entire series. And joining me the morning after to discuss and mostly to slander the Washington losers is Blake Murphy. Blake.
What's going on, man? There's nothing quite as bad as, you know, a night like last night, and then you wake up and you got to talk to me in the morning. It's
tough, man. Nothing's gonna really improve my my migraine. So I think this might improve my migraine a little bit. Just thinking about the Raptors and the glorious win they had. I mean,
glorious. It's a 10-point win that they didn't pull away until the fourth quarter.
But that was the part that was glorious. It was fun to see the Wizards collapse in the fourth quarter, because what did we say coming into the series, right? We were talking about how the Wizards are not clutch. You know, their stars really fade in the fourth quarter.
The Wizards are everything people want to say the Raptors are.
Oh my God. All right, let's just get right into it then. Yeah. No, but seriously though, it was really fun to watch the Raptors play this game, because I thought, in a way, I don't want to sound like Leo, but like, in a way, I felt like the Raptors playing from behind was not necessarily a bad thing. Because, like,
it keeps the urgency.
It keeps, exactly. And this team has always been better with a little bit of pressure on them, right? They're not front runners. They're not good at holding a lead.
Plus, too, I think part of it, too, is that, they're all defense lineups when they're trying to hold the lead aren't very good overall lineups.
Right.
So when they're playing close or playing tight and Dwayne Casey rides the hot hand or, whoever's, you know, playing the best and just playing the best overall, I think that's conducive too. But yeah, I thought the big thing in the fourth, you mentioned the Wall and Beal kind of wilting. I don't know if it says much about them, but I think it says a lot that the Raptors were able to put Kyle Lowry back in with 6 minutes in the fourth, and he played 31 minutes on the night, and DeMar played 33 minutes. And like, we've kind of talked it to death about their minutes load this year and their workload. And then like, you kind of see a great snapshot of it in one game where like, yeah, if you play 8 to 10 minutes less than the other stars, you're probably going to have a little extra juice in the tank.
Yeah, for sure. This is where, like, you know, depth was really coming into play for the Raptors, because, like, you know, the Wizards have no depth, and they lost some depth. I mean, they had Jody Meeks suspended right before the eve of the playoffs. They added Ty Lawson, which was actually a pretty nice addition for them, although not nice on Friday, because he got shut down by Fred. And we'll talk a lot about Fred, but yeah, I mean, like, not having Otto Porter for this game, he apparently had some, like, weird bleeding in his leg, and they needed to do a procedure.
Yeah, so he's been dealing with a contusion for weeks.
Right.
But I guess they took an MRI, and there was a blood buildup because blood wasn't flowing. So it's called compartment syndrome, where if you don't get it taken care of and you can't release the tension in that area, like, apparently you can lose a limb, like, if it gets really bad. Because, like, blood flow just, like, stops. The buildup will just stop blood flow to key parts of the limb. So yeah, I was reading up on it, and like, I'm sure that's only in more extreme cases, but like, the fact that they noticed it and he went for an extra MRI while playing through it is like, probably a big deal.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. I did not know that. I'm pretty sure John Wall and Bradley Beal are still mad at him, though.
Oh, yeah. Wall's comments after the game were ridiculous.
Yeah, 10 minutes after the game ended, John Wall's like, nah,
great, man, everyone but me and Brad.
We need more help. Yo, John, by the way, John Wall, 0-4 in the fourth quarter. Just 4 free throws. 2 of those were very undeserved. Bradley Beal, only 2 threes in the fourth. 2 of them combined for a -27. And that's because both of them played the fourth quarter. And, like, that's the point about the depth, right? Like, the Raptors had depth to turn to, whereas Washington, like, desperately went to their stars, and it just didn't work out for Scott Brooks. I don't think Scott Brooks should have put them in so early, or maybe even staggered them a little bit. He only ended up staggering Beal away from Wall for, like, a minute the fourth quarter.
Beal played the first possession of the fourth, and then came out for Wall, and then Beal came right back in.
I just don't understand that substitution.
Like, yeah, one possession of rest is not not that much, I guess. But also, you know, look, we've talked a lot about whether the 5-man bench unit could play in the playoffs, and it's not going to be that good every single time out, obviously. I think Dwayne Casey deserves a lot of credit for rolling it out there, trusting them for that much time. And, like, Fred VanVleet hasn't played in weeks, and he just steps in. He's like, whatever, I'll be plus 12 in 15 minutes. It doesn't... Yeah. Don't worry about Fred VanVleet.
No, you never have to worry about Fred VanVleet, man. You just never have to worry about this dude. And look, the stat line kind of lies about him a little bit because it, you know, he shot 1 of 5 from deep, but at least 2 of those were like desperation heaves, during broken possessions. But for the most part, I thought the parts where VanVleet really excelled was one, he was a very good floor general. He didn't turn the ball over, which is something that he just did a really good job of throughout the season, but the Raptors only had 6 turnovers, and like all series we've said that if the Raptors just limit their turnovers and get a good shot on offense and get back on defense, Washington's half-court offense is not good enough to beat them.
They could only score with a head of steam.
Exactly, exactly, right? And VanVleet did a good job of just, you know, keeping the second unit in check. And I also felt like he just brought a lot of confidence to the team. I mean, like, immediately when he checked in the second quarter, the Raptors went on a 13-4 run. And they eventually gave some of that back before the starters came back in. But, like, VanVleet was, you know, instrumental in that time. And especially the fact that he was able to perform, I felt like, gave some of these guys confidence. I mean, he found Siakam with this beautiful alley-oop feed and Siakam with a great finish. Very athletic. VanVleet also had a pull-up jumper in that second quarter there. And also, like, just, you know, in the fourth quarter, VanVleet, like, he hit a 3 to tie the game, which is big. He was open. He hit it. It was a good look. He found Pascal. I just thought VanVleet just did a good job of corralling loose balls, which was also an issue for the Raptors largely throughout this game when they gave up so many offensive rebounds. But, you know, he corralled a loose ball and, you know, he found Pascal for a streaking, you know, and one layup. He didn't finish a free throw, but he did get fouled pretty hard by Wall. I mean, look, I just think VanVleet, like, he came back and everything else made sense about the Raptors because the bench unit really didn't make sense with just DeLon Wright operating, and even with Lowry with the bench a little bit, that still wasn't as good because, like, you know, it was overextending Lowry. With VanVleet back, he buys Lowry some rest. Lowry was great in the fourth quarter, and the rest of the bench unit, you know, they just kind of followed suit. It's great to have their leader back.
Yeah, there were great quotes after the game. Eric Green had a good piece at The Athletic, kind of talking to guys about what Fred does for them. And Dwayne Casey joked at the podium about, you know, telling Pascal, like, basically, what, you can only play well when Fred's out there? And then after the game, Pascal, I forget the exact quote, but it was basically like, Fred completes me, and Fred completes the second unit, and it was very sweet.
It was very sweet.
Yeah, it's just to our earlier point about Washington's transition attack, just because I understated how the effectiveness of their half-court offense, but they were 8th in half-court offense of all 16 playoff teams through this series, and they were number 1 off of live rebounds. So you take better shots, you get back in transition, you cut down on turnovers. You know, they were that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
That was the ballgame.
You know, it's a big difference. And, like, this is the playoffs, right? So, like, every little 8-minute stretch by Norman Powell where he comes in and takes a bad shot, like all that matters. And, like, VanVleet,
or in game 5 when he came in and wasn't bad and he right, just kind of right. held even, like, that's, right. that's even those minutes are huge,
but that's just you're just praying that Norm just comes in and just keeps shit even, right? Like, VanVleet actually came in and swung the game. I mean, like, the fact that he was a plus 12, like, he was part of the Raptors' 2 biggest runs in the second and fourth quarters. And You know, and that, and he really did pick up for an otherwise slow start for DeMar DeRozan, who was only 6 of 18. And, you know, Dwayne Casey, I thought, made a great move to just keep DeMar on the bench, chilling in the fourth quarter until like 3 minutes left, and the Raptors were already up 8-9 points. You know, the bench unit actually had swung a 5-point deficit at the start of the fourth quarter and got the lead. And I thought it was great that Casey, you know, rode that lineup throughout most of the game. And, he, you know, he kept VanVleet out there. Ultimately, he subbed out VanVleet for DeMar. But, you know, I thought Dwayne did a great job of coaching this game. And also, Dwayne went back to Valanciunas to close the game. That was great. And JB was great.
I thought Valanciunas being able to play with the bench unit in the second quarter, too, when Poeltl had fouls, so they didn't have to either get Poeltl in deeper foul trouble or go to Bebe. Mm-hmm. I thought that was big. That was big. Obviously, their first half was not super effective, but the second quarter, they managed to kind of hang around and not let Washington pull ahead a little bit. And Valanciunas being out there with the bench, he doesn't fit stylistically at all, but it was pretty solid. And, man, it's funny. I think sometimes, I don't know about the collective we, but I, coming into the season at least, maybe underrated chemistry a little bit. And you see it like when DeLon Wright and Jonas are on the floor together, you can tell that they haven't played a lot together. Mm-hmm. Whereas Kyle and Jonas Valanciunas, and even now DeMar and Jonas Valanciunas have a bit more pick and roll chemistry. Like DeLon just doesn't quite find the spots, but I thought they played pretty well together there. VanVleet obviously found him for the one, like one-handed tough lob finish. And, this was good. Marcin Gortat with 2 points in 31 minutes. Love to see that.
Yep. Yeah, I thought JV's defense today was last night, I guess, was phenomenal, man. I mean,
there were a couple times Wall drove into him and the verticality was there.
Yep. No, I mean, look, the growth of JV has been so fun to watch, like, all season. And, you know, like, obviously he had that breakout performance breakout. He's been really good in the whole series, but, like.
Yeah, he was just what he is. Game four was the only game I thought where he didn't play that well.
That's true, yeah. But, I mean, like, in game five, he really had his moment to shine when.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, he's turned to in the end of the game, and, you know, he got a lot of love, and deservedly so. And I think that that should earn him more confidence and more leeway going forward. You know, especially on nights when Serge Ibaka shoots 3 of 10. I mean, good lord.
Wait, Serge Ibaka played?
Yo, the funniest moment was the Raptors were, like, making a push in the third quarter, and they're only down three, and Serge was like, all right, I'm going to take this pull-up three-pointer.
Oh, man. I mentioned that in my recap at Raptors Republic. Just, like, it was their first opportunity to take a lead the entire game, and that's the shot that they got. And at the time, I was like, this is not a good omen. Like, you finally could take a lead, and it's an Ibaka pull-up three. Also, with Ibaka, I find it hilarious that Markieff Morris was talking the most trash after the series is over about how the better team didn't win. Markieff Morris, you couldn't outplay half of Serge Ibaka. Ibaka showed up for a couple games in this series, and you guys basically played even.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, this is what the Wizards do. Like, all the, you know, it's actually really funny to see all of them talk afterward, after you have the win, because you can just, like, look down on them and laugh at them, because, like, you got Kelly Oubre saying, like, oh, I'm going to come back from the dead and kill you. And then he goes off for 3 points.
One of seven shooting.
After getting the start. You have more fouls than points.
I'm so happy that DeLon said. I was worried that after DeLon got that block that would be it. And DeLon wouldn't mention it and he would just let that speak for it. Because he's such a nice kid.
Yeah.
Kid. He turned 26 the other day.
Still a kid. It's fine. He's like 6 months older than me.
But yeah, so I thought that was, it was nice that he, you know, he put the tweet out there, Kuzma putting the tweet out there for him. And then, you know, he had said, he kind of at practice when we asked him about it, he was just like, basically like, okay, well, we'll see in game six. And then as he walked away, he kind of muttered, he was like, I'll have a quote for you after game six. and then for him to call that the highlight of the series.
Yo, that's really funny to hear from, too, because, like, that was definitely not the highlight of the series for DeLon, right? He had so many good games in the series, man.
He had his first career alley-oop dunk. Yeah. That's the highlight. Also, he shot 47% on threes.
Yeah, he was phenomenal. The Raptors overall shot great from three in the series. I mean, everyone except for his
41%.
Yeah, DeMar, I thought, shot, like, I don't know what he
DeMar was 38%. Even Ibaka shot 43%.
That one's shocking to me.
I can't believe it. So the only player who took threes and didn't shoot well were basically the depth pieces, like Van Vliet, Lorenzo Brown, and Norman Powell are the only guys who didn't shoot at least 38%.
That's crazy.
In the series. Other than, oh, Poeltl missed that 1-3 at the end of a clock last night too.
Yeah, the Raptors offense I thought wasn't like necessarily the best last night, but I mean the fact that they just didn't turn the ball over was
yeah,
huge.
That happens sometimes with the second unit, right? It's like, right, even with Fred out there, sometimes they pound the ball into the ground and you have a lot of like, DeLon tries to create, they have to reset, Fred tries to create, it's just a lot of Poeltl screening and kind of hoping the defense makes a mistake. And the way Washington was guarding CJ all series, like they were face guarding him and sometimes doubling him on the perimeter if Kyle wasn't out there with him. Like the fact that Miles shot 39% on threes and got 5 a game off with the way Washington was defending him, I thought was, I know people didn't think Miles had the best series outside of games 1 and 2.
Just really up and down.
Yeah, he's a 3-point shooter, man. 3-point specialists are up and down. Not everyone can be JJ Redick and Kyle Korver.
Yeah, I think just like CJ had 30 points in the first two games. And he was phenomenal in those first two games. He had 8 threes. And afterwards, he only hit 4 threes for the rest of the series. And, like, that's where the up and down comes down to. Yeah. But, I mean, like, you know, we understand that that's what CJ brings to the team. Like, he's just kind of a spark piece, but,
And guess what? As long as he has one, look, I know obviously you always want a guy to make his threes because it's killer when he doesn't, but the fact that he shot 31 over 6 games and the fact that he did have 2 games where he was really hot, that's the kind of, like, there's a difference between hitting your threes and providing spacing. Mm-hmm. And as long as Miles is shooting them and has one or two of those games in a series, the spacing is there. And like, you see it, if you go back and watch some of these possessions, God, the pick and roll has so much more room to operate because no one will take their eyes off of Miles. And there were, I thought in the fourth quarter of game 5, even the Raptors got really creative with running a lot of Lowry Miles stuff off the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you have to have 2 guys dialed into that. So an entire side of the floor can't help. And you can't really do that with a guy who doesn't have the trigger that Miles has. So even though he, you know, I mean, still 39% of the series is fine. Obviously, there were up and down games, but I still think he offensively at least provided the value that he needs to provide.
Yeah, and in Game 6, he had that huge momentum shifting three, coming down in transition. I'm not sure who found him. I think DeLon found him. That was actually kind of a delayed fast break because there was kind of a botched pass. Otherwise, I thought Siakam was going to get a dunk.
Yeah, and Miles was kind of behind the play.
Yeah, that's Miles, though. You know, the rest of the bench, you know, they're all young. They're all just streaking ahead. And then there comes CJ Miles just like, yeah, I'm just going to chill. And it's like, oh, I'm open for 3. Bang.
Also, Miles had 11 free throw attempts in this series, and it's so weird to see one of your three-point shooters getting to the free throw line once in a while. Like, imagine Damari Carroll, Patrick Patterson, or Terrence Ross getting 11 free throws in a series.
There's just no way. But, I mean, like...
This is the lowest of bars. That's fewer than 2 free throw attempts a game, and it still seems substantial. Yeah,
but I thought, like, you know, as much as CJ didn't score well from, like, most of the series, I thought, like, he did make adjustments to drive to the rim a couple of times. Like, he drove to the rim against Bradley Beal in Game 6 and had a tough finish. But, I mean, like, that's the kind of stuff you have to do. I'm not saying that he's going to need to drive a lot because, like, realistically, I've seen enough of driving from CJ where if he isn't able to just, like, dunk, his, like, little push shots, he doesn't have much touch on those.
But even early in the fourth quarter of Game 5, he drove twice and had a pair of dump-offs for Poeltl.
Yeah, exactly.
That drew fouls. And then he attacked one time, or he cut to the rim after Poeltl came out and it was the Lowry with him. One of those Lowry-Miles actions got him like a nice cut to the rim. And, I don't know. It was good. I apologize that we're focusing so much on CJ Miles. Right. It was just kind of okay in the series.
But I mean, like, that's kind of the point, right? Like, if this is the thing though with the Raptors, like the supporting pieces have to actually draw attention. And I think, you know, as much as if we look at the bigger picture, as much as we think about like the culture change and everything and how much that's, you know, has to do with Colin DeMar changing the way they play and Dwayne Casey sort of, you know, doing what he's doing, like a lot of the culture change is also just that the Raptors have a lot like more capable supporting pieces, right? And like as much as CJ struggled, like you mentioned earlier, the Wizards always covered him. And if you have one guy that's getting covered that hard and he's drawing that much attention, like, that's a positive piece for your offense. And the Raptors are able to leverage that into points. And, you know, and you look at the rest of the supporting cast. I mean, Pascal was phenomenal in Game 6. You know, 5 of 6 shooting for 11 points, 8 rebounds, 3 offensive.
The defense on Wall.
Dude, the defense on Bradley Beal when he, like, there was, like, that... I don't know, some sort of weird switch happened, and it was like a Beal-Gortat pick and roll guarded by Poeltl and Siakam, and Siakam comes down and chases down Beal's drive to the rim, and he was also, he blocked Mike Scott finally, which is like, thank God, like, please.
Him and Jonas both blocked Mike Scott in the same possession. It was just like, finally, Mike Scott is not a thing anymore.
Yeah. What did Mike Scott
finally
do?
Mike Scott. I don't know. He finished 3 of 7. A minus.
How?
Yeah.
He still made
and
three
one
shots.
One of those shots was like, full on, late in the shot clock,
yeah,
summer workout hoodie mellow, like one-legged fadeaway at the elbow, and it still drops.
Mike Scott's going to get paid. He's going to get paid. And not
good
by the
Hopefully
Wizards,
he gets
too.
Paid in the Western Conference.
Yeah, 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 definitely, definitely. Yeah, he's not getting paid by the Wizards because they already have the fifth highest payroll. But
get all the way out of a potential playoff series with the Raptors again, yeah. Mike Scott.
Seriously, man. If he signs with the Chicago Bulls, we're definitely fucked. But
it's over.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, look, the whole supporting cast was nice. You know, I still want Jakob Poeltl to find his rhythm a little bit.
Yeah, he's the only guy that I came out of that series pretty worried with.
Yeah, but I mean, what are you really gonna do? Like, I thought in this series, like, there was that one, like, moving screen, like, I was either on him or JV. But like, you know, like, it's just, I don't know, man. The Raptors just weren't really allowed to screen in the same way that, like, Gortat was in this series. And I think it really just confused Poeltl because, like, that's, like, half of his offense is just him setting screens. The other half is getting putbacks and little dumb finishes. But
in terms of what you do, I don't – like, he's obviously going to have a role still.
Yeah, for sure.
If you were to draw Cleveland in the next round, maybe even Indiana with how they use Sabonis as a center off the bench – that might be the spot you tighten the rotation and his minutes come down from 16 to like 10 or 12 or something like that. If you're tightening things up, just because you know, either of the second round opponents are the type of opponent you might try to go a little bit small against. Not that you need to, because again, as we've talked about, the Raptors have been good big all year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm not really messing with the Ibaka Poeltl front court against either Cleveland or Indiana, I don't think.
Please, let that thing just die, man. Let that thing just die. But, alright, let's look back on this game and hand out 3 stars. I think we could pretty confidently give Kyle Lowry the first star. 24 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists.
By the way, if you're still getting off Kyle Lowry wasn't good in this series takes because he only had 11 points in game 3, I honestly don't know what sport you're watching if you don't think Kyle Lowry had a tremendous
Wait, who was it Andrew Sharp that wrote that?
Well, he wrote it after game 5 that Kyle Lowry was being neutralized, but even last night I tweeted something about Lowry and people were in my mentions about how he wasn't that good. Kyle Lowry, not only a plus 8.9 net rating when he was on and minus 13.6 when he was off for the team, 60% true shooting, and he averaged what? What did he end up averaging? I'm on totals here. That's not... He averaged 17 points, 5 rebounds, over 8 assists, and 2 steals.
Yeah.
And he shot 44% on threes and had 60% true shooting.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't understand how much better you can do with this. I'm looking
And he spent his entire time, 36 minutes a game, guarding Bradley Beal or John Wall.
Yeah. And he did a great job of guarding Bradley Beal, man.
I don't know what more someone could have wanted from Kyle Lowry in this series, unless they wanted him to just start chucking.
Yeah. And what is this piece, man? The Raptors are still the Raptors. They're not. They're not. They're not still the Raptors. I mean, like, look, as much as we want to sign to the Wizards, this is a very playoff-proven team, all right? They've never lost in the first round. The Raptors just came in and took care of business in 6 games. Like,
they were 11-2 at home in the playoffs during that run and had won 8 in a row at home in the playoffs.
Yeah, and look, this is the thing. Man, the goalposts really change on the Raptors.
Like, of course they
really
do.
Really change, right? Because coming into the series, it was like, all right, it's gonna be tough. The Wizards are gonna give them a tough run, 5 or 6 games, easily, maybe even 7. And you even got some people saying the Raptors are gonna be upset. And then after the series is done, it's like, oh wow, look at them. They needed 5 or 6 games to win the series. I'm like, yo, what are you saying? Yo, you just said it. They just
moved
the goalposts, man.
Where, like, if Washington had drawn Boston, Washington would have been the trendiest upset pick in the playoffs.
Of course. Of course.
Now, look, all of that said, Washington is better than a typical 8 seed.
Of course.
Statistically, the Raptors, as dominant as they were in the first round, should not have struggled with any 8 seed anyway. I think this series fell within the range of expected outcomes for me. I thought game 4 was the only game that I was like really upset about. Game 3 was game 3, I don't know, man. Sometimes series have a game like that. Sometimes you're just bad one night.
Yeah.
But game four was the only one where it was, where you could even make the argument like, oh, same old Raptors.
Yeah, and that was literally the only one, man. That's the thing. Yeah. That was the only one. And look, the series is competitive, but like, this is the playoffs, man. No one's unless you're like the shameless Timberwolves or something like that, you're not getting blown out. You're just not.
Unless you have Damian Lillard at point guard, you're not bowing out without a fight.
The new trash bros, Dame Lillard and just Dame Lillard. Okay. CJ was actually fun in that series. Okay, so Kyle Argus, our first star. Second star, JV, probably? 14
probably
and 12.
JV, yeah.
Yeah. Also, JV came in the fourth quarter and grabbed, like, every single offensive rebound.
Dude, this team's rebounding rate with and without Valanciunas in this series was ludicrous.
Yeah, it really was.
They grabbed 54% of rebounds, all rebounds when he was on the floor, and 46% when he was off.
Yeah.
That is enormous.
It would help if Serge Ibaka could, you know, grab the basketball.
Or if anyone helped out Jakob Poeltl when Poeltl goes to contest at the rim.
Nah. Everyone's just too concerned with trying to streak out in transition.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, JV was great. JV was great. I mean, we talked about his defense at the rim. You know, his pick and rolls, like, consistently when the Raptors run pick and roll with JV, they've gotten great stuff. They've really cut down on that forcing the pass to JV. Only one of them today, when Lowry tried to find JV early in the first quarter. Which the Raptors did not play well in the first quarter. Like, they got outscored, you know, 30 to 20. But, I mean, like, the Raptors were able to immediately flip that thanks to Van Vliet. And,
yeah,
man, JV was good. JV was good. And he should, especially when Ibaka's playing like this, man. Like, he should really close games.
All right, I'm torn on third star.
Okay.
Because, obviously, narratively and the boost he gave, Fred Van Vliet is a good fit. But Pascal Siakam was really, really good, too.
Yeah, yeah. You know what, we just split that. It's fine. We don't have to decide between the two. There's lots of love to go around, man. Fred VanVleet can get some love for his leadership, and Pascal Siakam can get some love for the fact that he outscored John Wall in the fourth quarter.
Also, like, the timing of Siakam playing what I thought were, you know, his back half of the series was significantly better than his front half.
Right.
Depending on who the Raptors draw in the next round, could be a big Siakam series, so pretty good to see.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, look, Siakam, 11 points tonight, 8 rebounds, 5 assists shooting, a crazy alley-oop finish, a mid-range jumper, which I don't think we saw all season.
Yeah, he had a little 12-footer.
That was like that was a rookie Pascal Siakam move right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was overall a really fun series, a really fun
game. Do we have to give a Gerald Henderson award?
Yeah, that's the thing. This is tough. I guess we have to give it to Markieff.
Nah, I'm giving it to Otto Porter because all the people who thought he was bad all series, you see what it looks like when he's not there.
Wow.
Now, Markieff had 15 rebounds, man.
That one didn't make any sense, man. Also, Markieff tried to, like, punk the Raptors, and then, like, he went over to the Raptors bench to talk shit to OG. So, like, what are you guys doing? What are you guys doing in Washington? What's wrong with you guys?
I want to know your thoughts on this because I saw a commenter on the recap was pretty mad that none of the Raptors like stepped to Markieff for stepping to OG, and I get that, but on the one hand, you don't want to get a suspension as you're about to win a series because Markieff will just laugh at you because he's going home for the summer, and two, I kind of feel like the Raptors just like, it's not really they didn't protect OG, they just like are not concerned about OG, like they just trust that he would take care of it if he needed it and that it's not going to get in his head at all.
Yeah.
I don't know, like maybe Ibaka should have done something because he did literally nothing else in that game.
Yeah, I was actually kind of hoping Ibaka fought Markieff in that game. No, yeah. I mean, look, OG's a big kid. He can handle himself. It's not an issue. Him stepping over to the entire bench, there's just no need to actually get into anything because at that point you're giving up text.
Yeah.
You just let this man talk. That's all good. Like, this is the whole thing with the Wizards. Just let him talk. Let him try to, like, you know, embarrass themselves with all these big quotes or whatever. Like, you know,
the Raptors did a good job of keeping it out of the media, but they were talking a lot of trash in that series as well.
No, of course. Like, how would you not?
Every time they showed the Raptors bench, they were all in John Wall's ear or Bradley Beal's ear. I'm sure there was a little bit of them yelling at Otto Porter that none of his teammates trust him and they're trying to replace you, Paul George.
It's not going to work.
Yeah.
Yo, honestly, man, you could just tell how much the Wizards hate each other. And, like, I think that manifests in them, like, yelling at the other team. And John Wall, like, pumped, like, smacking his chest. And Bradley Beal. Like, there was a play where Bradley Beal scored in the fourth quarter. then flopped trying to like deny the inbound, then got up and then like put his hands up like he did something. I'm like, yo, relax. Like, just relax yourself, man. You did nothing. And that's the whole Wizards experience. Like, Oubre talking shit, Markieff talking shit, Gortat.
Oubre, I don't get, man.
Oubre's just in his own world, man.
If I was that good looking, man, I would never say anything to anyone. Exactly. And no one could tell me nothing.
Exactly. Bro, here's the thing. I knew Kelly Oubre wasn't really about that life when, after, what, game one or two, there was that video of Drake calling him a bum during the game, and someone asked him about it afterwards, and Oubre's response was, oh, that's my guy, you know, it's just an honor to be in the same conversation as him. He's like, really? Really? That's what you had to say? He's like, yeah.
We're on the A-list together in the summer.
Nobody even knows who you are, Kelly. What are you doing? What are you doing? This man got punked by Kelly Olynyk in last year's playoffs, man. Everybody on this team talking shit, though. Even Jason Smith. Jason Smith didn't even play a single second in the series, and he was talking shit.
I thought I confused Jason Smith for a coach multiple times at shoot-arounds.
Yeah.
I was like, man, they got some young coaches. Oh, Jason Smith just isn't working out today because he knows he's never getting into this series.
Yeah, that's not Scott McCullough. Like, what's going on?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Should we look ahead to Sunday's Game 7?
Well, we could. I mean, I could just ask quickly, like, who would you rather play?
I don't know, man. I'm torn.
I'm not that torn. I'm not that torn.
Look, as someone whose income depends on the Raptors going further, I want the Pacers.
Yeah, exactly.
As someone who wants good content and doesn't want to hear if the Raptors make a deep run, how they didn't beat LeBron to do it, and who also kind of thinks the Raptors could beat LeBron anyway, so it's not crazy. Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm torn.
Yeah.
I very much, in general, I don't like the whole, like, oh, you hope for an injury on the other team, or you hope that a team gets knocked out early. Like, I feel like you should want to play the best teams on the way. Obviously you play whoever's put in front of you, but I don't think it's a good thing or a good sign about your confidence level if you're hoping for the worst team and hoping for an upset. Not that Indiana's bad. Indiana's been really good all year, and they're a feisty team, and they'll be a tough matchup. But I don't know, man. I'm on the fence because I know wishing for LeBron is really risky, and it could look really, really stupid after. But I don't know. I'm still on the fence about it.
Yeah, I'm not that conflicted. I want to see the Pacers. And it's a matter of ceiling, right? Like, I already feel like the Pacers are – this is the Pacers playing at their ceiling. And quite honestly, they're playing better than the Cavaliers. The Cavaliers just have a higher ceiling.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The Raptors are beating the Pacers. It's not, I would have less fear in the Pacers than I would in the Wizards. And that's nothing against the Pacers, man. They played phenomenal. And you look at what Thad Young's doing defensively. You look at Victor Oladipo finally waking up, although whatever. Victor Oladipo's really just had a nice season, and he's been up and down in the playoffs, but he's had some great moments, including dunking on LeBron.
He's tough, man. And OG's done a, OG's done a pretty decent job on him, but we'll have to, Oladipo, I think, only had one really good game against the Raptors in the four meetings.
Right. And we completely shut him down in the last meeting. I mean, we shut down all of the Pacers. I think the Pacers had like 77 points, but like, I'm just not as concerned because their offensive ceiling isn't as high. And if you look at Cleveland right now, like, a lot of their shooters are not scoring. And I'm not saying that these shooters are great shooters or anything like that, right? Like, you know, when everyone was saying, like, wow, they changed their whole team and, like, Kobe Altman deserves Executive of the Year consideration. I'm like, yeah, okay, I get it. But, like, at the same time, like, who did you really get? Like, Rodney Hood is just not that good. He's not.
George Hill can't get healthy.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, then you have Jordan Clarkson, who's just straight up a bad player. Like, I just didn't think he was a good player whatsoever.
Yeah.
Jose Calderon has faded in the playoffs. Tristan Thompson doesn't play.
How dare?
Dude, their second leading scorer is Kevin Love with 11 points, and he's shooting 32% from the field because he's got, like, a thumb injury, man. Like, it's LeBron at 33, then Kevin Love at 11, Kyle Korver at 9, and then, like, 8, 7. And, like, you know, having said all that, though, like, the fact that a lot of these guys aren't shooting well really does scare me. Like, George Hill shooting 33%, LeBron shooting 32% from deep, you know, J.R. Smith 30%, Jose Calderon 27. Like, you know, some of that's going to come back. Rodney Hood shooting 16%. I don't know if that one comes back. He's just Terrence Ross, man. I don't get the fascination with Rodney Hood, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just think the Cavaliers have better shooters, and, you know, it'd be more dangerous to defend that, but ultimately the Raptors look like a better team than either of those teams right now, so not too concerned either way.
Yeah, and I think that's the right attitude to take into it. I don't know, man. It should be fun either way.
It should be fun either way. All right, Blake.
It's also more likely I travel for Cleveland than Indiana, so maybe
I'm... Oh, you're not trying to go to Indiana?
I don't know if I'm traveling at all.
Oh.
But Cleveland is drivable, so...
How far is Indiana? That's a big...
Like 8-9 hours?
You and Alex can split that, man.
Yeah, but it's like, it's also lost work time, right? It's not just the time in the car. It's like in the Eastern Conference Finals, Alex and I greyhounded down to Cleveland because, like, with the thinking being you can work on the bus because it's got Wi-Fi.
Right.
It didn't really work out that way.
But. It's only an 8-hour drive, Blake.
Yeah, it's not great. It's eight hours of lost work time, yeah, especially with no extra days off. Like, every day is a practice day or game day. So.
Yeah. All right. For your sake, I hope it's Cleveland, but also for the Raptors' sake, I hope it's Indiana.
Yeah, I don't have a strong preference.
There you go.
I'm just trying to psych myself up in the event that LeBron wins.
Oh, man. I don't want to see LeBron. I just don't want to see LeBron. But, I mean, seriously, this is the weakest team he's had in a long time. Anyway, Blake, thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah. All right. Let's go, Raptors. The weekly pod will be devoted to a series preview, and that series will be decided, obviously, on Sunday, so that podcast will either come on Sunday night or Monday morning, and, you know, the reaction pod will be back on Tuesdays, Tuesday for game one, so thanks everyone for listening. 10 Things came out also late, like I said earlier, like, it just wasn't feeling great, but this podcast did cheer me up, Blake. Thank you.
Good, man. I'm glad to hear.
All right, peace.
Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report limitations apply. Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report limitations apply.